we went through. And I think another thing that really shocked me about the whole experience was the amount of emotional trauma. Like, no one tells you when you're about to go into infertility treatment the devastating emotional trauma that you are setting yourself up for. And I was not prepared for that. And I ended up falling into depression. And I was saying that, the first 37 years of my life were, happy and joyous and wonderful. So part of my confusion was I had no idea what that emotion was. I had no idea what deep, deep grief looked like or felt like. And it took me a couple years just to even figure out what was happening. And during those couple years, I was just sinking deeper and deeper and deeper. And I think I'm so happy to meet everyone here because I think there's a certain amount of courage and bravery and perseverance and tenacity it takes to get to the other side, because that takes a lot of work, and especially because most of us were doing it by ourselves.
Without any roadmap. And I think that to me was the hardest thing. I couldn't give myself permission to grieve because I felt like I hadn't earned it somehow. And yet at the same time, when I would read books about people going through significant loss or people living in a really bad experience that traumatized and changed them, there was a recognition or some way of putting a framework around it to say, this is what you can expect, and if you get to this stage, don't be surprised. Or if you feel this emotion, it's not abnormal.
And this, I mean, I was thinking about, I went through, a friend of mine had breast cancer, and I kind of went through that with her and went to pretty much all of her doctor's appointments with her. And from the second that she received her diagnosis, she had this amazing support. I mean, they handed her a packet. Here are groups you can join. Here are places that you can go to get, head coverings or, and this is somebody that you can sit and talk to as you go through this. And, with infertility, it's just like, well, you need an infertility workup.
It's a
Okay,
whole other
well,
world.
what is that? Well, you just go get these tests. And there was just kind of, well, yeah. Oh, so, okay, well, so we'd recommend IVF. Well, why? Why? What is it about my body and my condition that makes you think that this is going to be the appropriate treatment for me? And those questions were never answered. I mean, those tests were never done. It's just like, oh, well, you've been trying to get pregnant for over a year, so obviously IVF is the right path for you. And it's kind of, you're going through this health crisis, but it's not treated like another health crisis would be. It's a production line. And that was just so startling for me that support of going through something really, a health crisis came with no support and no roadmap and no anybody sitting down and saying, okay, well, these are your options and this is what will happen if you go this route. And there was none of that. And then at the end of it, you come to the end of it. And I mean, the end of my journey was a phone call that said, basically, well, your last IUI was not successful, so call us on the first day of your next period and we'll schedule this thing. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. But there was no, okay, well, it didn't work for you, so let's look at your options, or here's the support group for you to go and talk about this. There was none of that. It was just like, okay, well, thanks, bye.
Adios.
Yeah, adios. Off you go out into the
On the
world.
emotional support side of it, and it's just a little thing that kind of triggered me. I have a friend who didn't get breast cancer, but knock, but is at a higher risk, and had to go through a lot of things with that. And she, one scenario she shared with me and how freaked out she was at, maybe her, second appointment, one of the early appointments. And, some of us have had that experience. And then she went on to tell me how, this doctor, I was in tears, and the doctor took me into the room but really spent, half an hour with her, comforting her, reassuring her. And of course, I was glad. That's what I would
Of
want my
course,
friends to have, but it also, and it wasn't the moment to say, oh yeah, that must be nice, or gee, what a quaint notion, or I have no idea what
No,
that's like.
no.
It wasn't the moment
No.
to throw that on, but I also knew that she, and I said, well, I'm really glad that that happened, and I'm glad you got some support, but I was also thinking, like, that would never in a million years right now happen in reproductive medicine. You know, there's people, sometimes they go into the bathroom to cry in the waiting room. Mm-hmm. There's no, it's so in and out. You know, there's people in the waiting rooms who have just had miscarriages with, you know, people who, you know, are finding out that they're pregnant, and it's, and it's crazy. And I, back to my friend, I was also realizing in that conversation, not only, wow, what a difference in the emotional support from the medical community, but that as far as the friendship, that my friend had no, just no concept that I had gotten none of that. Mm-hmm. And that I was in, you know, boatloads of those emotional positions in waiting rooms and in doctor's offices and whatever. And it, there's just, there's nothing.
Those waiting rooms are a special level of health.
Yes, yes. They are.
There's always the wall of babies, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then you get the nurses or the doctors to say, so when was your last period? And are you planning to have a child? It's like, read the freaking file. Don't hit me with this every single time I come in here. And we've talked about how do we communicate to the medical community, can you please make a kind of a safe place for women who are going through this, because a huge percentage of us are going through this.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That brought to mind that expression, it takes a village to raise a child, and everyone seems to naturally understand that, but it also takes a village to try to have a child sometimes, and it also takes a village to help us when we're not having a child, or it takes a village to grieve the loss of not having children.
Yes.
And there's no protocol for that.
The experience I, looking back on it now, realize was physicians who were treating organs. They weren't treating a person.
Right, people.
Yeah. Right, a human.
Who had dreams and a very big expectation for what was going to come. So when someone is asking you a transactional question, this doesn't apply, right? It's not a yes-no answer. And I think that's where we talk about that experience of knowing you're not going to become a parent, it's difficult to wrap your own mind around it, and then trying to figure out how to present that information to other people who don't have the context.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you know, I think we're in all new territory. I don't know that other generations have dealt with this in the same way. I mean, identity issues become real.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said before, you know, we're generation IVF. So the trauma and feelings that we're going through in some ways haven't been dealt with before. When I first started writing, one of the first things I wrote about was I used the term infertility survivor. And as soon as I said that, I got several emails back of people going, I don't understand. Why are you saying infertility survivor? And, you know, the hair on the back of my neck started to prickle up. And I was like, deep breaths, deep breaths. But, you know, to give an example, the technical end of my fertility treatment, I remember exactly where I was. I was driving on a very kind of treacherous piece of road near Washington, D.C. on my way to the acupuncturist, because I read that, you know, acupuncture would help everything.
Yeah, it's so helpful.
Yeah. And I get a call, not from the doctor, but from a nurse as I'm driving, you know, and, you know, before hands-free phones. And she just said, your implantation has been canceled.
Oh.
And I said, what do you mean?
Have a nice day.
Yeah, she literally, that's all she said was, your implantation has been canceled. And I said, do you mean the embryo died? And she said, yes.
Oh.
And, you know, I thought, what a weird phone call.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't tell me that my child had died. She told me my procedure had been canceled. And I was kind of waiting for something else, like even a I'm sorry or anything, and nothing like that. And again, it wasn't even from the doctor. And I just hung up the phone, and the piece of road I was on, you couldn't get off. So I was driving north.
Okay, you and your metaphors this weekend, you have got
tragic symbolism. Right?
Yeah, so I was driving north, and I just was sitting there, and I remember just feeling numb. Like, I actually didn't cry right away. I was just numb, and I was actually trying not to crash the car.
Yes.
Because, you know, and there's, like, the Potomac River was on my right, and, you know, there's a part of you that's like, what if I just drove the car right into the Potomac River right now? What would that be like? This pain would stop, you know? And that might be good, but I guess I should tell my husband what's going on. So, like, you know, once I got to a place where I could call him, you know, I called him and I told him pretty much what I told you guys. And then, you know, so I guess my point there is partly to underscore the term infertility survivor.
Yeah.
First, I just had to survive the phone call.
Yes.
Then I had to survive the car ride. And then I had to survive the rest of the day. And that was just that one day.
Yes.
And that was, even though that was the end of my fertility treatment journey, that was 5 years ago, and I'm still healing, you know, from the experience, like the impact that had on my identity, you know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life when I thought I was going to be a mother, the impact it had on all my relationships, the impact it had on my career, because that was another thing, too. Like, you just kind of assume, oh, I'll be a stay-at-home mom for a while, I'll put my career on hold, and that's how that's going to go, you know, and I'll freelance from home. You know, so then I thought, well, what am I going to do with my career now? You know, so that's part of the identity crisis as well. And so to me, it's so, because we've been through it, the term infertility survivor makes so much sense to us.
Yes.
But
yes.
One of the reasons I blog at all and I talk about it, because some people are confused why I'm still talking about it 5 years later, is there, I really believe that there needs to be more awareness about what happens to people like us and our spouses, and also so that there's more sensitivity in the public eye, the way there are for other minorities, the way there are for other debilitating conditions and trauma that other people go through.
Yeah. I want to go back. You talked about how previous generations handle it. And I think one of the key things about our generation coming of age in the 70s is that the big news story of any infertility or fertility conversation was baby Louise, the first test tube baby, the successful test tube baby. This thing was celebrated, continues to be celebrated. And now, what, 40 years later, we're starting to find out about the women who came before us and the devastation. I've never heard those stories.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Right. And what they went, they were the women who, you know, who went through what you all have been through, we have all been through, and we never heard from them. And who knows if they shared what their families went through, because all we heard about was that one success.
Yeah.
And what this generation that is coming of age now is dealing with is the freeze your eggs, it's your guarantee you can have a baby anytime you want, and we already know that is a big fat lie.
And it's not only that, it's like, you know, this idea that there is this medical technology that now creates the opportunity for miracles.
Yes.
But what's always missing from that conversation is the emotional impact of going through that, and that is never, I mean, I think all of us have had some form of, you know, well, just do IVF or just adopt, or and it's always this just, as if here's this menu of options for you, and just pick one, for God's sake, and do it, and then get on with
and
it,
so
we can
stop
talking about it.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
And
then you can conform.
And you can make the rest of us comfortable, because we don't have to think about it anymore.
And I find whatever the venue is, whether it's, you know, reproductive medicine, the holistic modalities, whatever it is, it's the, you know, there's the one outcome that's being told, and then the outcome where there's not a pregnancy or no parenthood, it just doesn't seem to get told, and it's like again and again and again.
And all puns intended, that there is a misconception that all you have to do is keep trying. It's just try hard enough, want it badly enough, and there is a way for it to happen. And you're right, all the other stories and the percentage success rates are not talked about.
I even had a gynecologist